is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
To London, the Telegraph. Ukrainian soldiers forced to ration ammunition. A senior Ukrainian artillery brigade officer told the Financial Times, indeed, there's really not enough ammunition. This comes as NATO has signed a $1.2 billion deal to buy hundreds of thousands of artillery shells as it moves to shore up supplies amid Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Caveat about that purchase. According to the Financial Times, the shells to be purchased are either for Ukraine or for to replenish the arsenals that were depleted by passing ammunition to Ukraine early in the war. I can join this with the news, well, not news, the facts from Congress. There is zero to unlikely possibility of the request by the Biden administration moving through this Congress. The Republican House is not set on it, and the influence of the campaign means that there's no risk-taking whatsoever challenging the opinion of the former president that Ukraine is none of our affair or we're not going to continue to contribute to the war in Ukraine. You can take it in many directions. The fact is that the House will not move. Even the Senate has not come up with a satisfactory compromise about the many demands at the border, in Gaza, the Gaza war, in Taiwan, and in Ukraine. Not satisfied. So I welcome Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. It's unfair to present Mary with a no-win scenario, but that's where we are right now. So we're going to entertain what comes after a ceasefire, an armistice, a negotiation, a peace deal. There are many ways to approach this metaphorically. However, out of ammunition, out of time, out of money. Mary, a very good evening to you. I was told last week that some artillery positions were down to two a day. Now there might be less than that, according to the London Telegraph. What does the world after Ukraine stops fighting look like, Mary? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, first, I think it's important just to take a step back and appreciate how we got to this very quickly kind of worst case scenario, which is something I call the muddled middle. The United States has chosen under this administration to help Ukraine, but not enough to win, which is resulting in this stalemate that we're seeing because Kyiv doesn't have the capability to produce the munitions that it needs to gain an advantage in the war. And so it's dependent largely on the United States, Britain, and its European partners. You asked what happens if we do end up here in some sort of not just continued stalemate, but a forced ceasefire, where the West says to Zelensky, look, we won't provide you with anything else unless you come to the table. Deeply unfair, I think very dangerous, not just to their interests, but to the interests of our partners in Europe and to us. But let's set that aside. Let's say that you get there. What would happen? Well, I think what it would message to Putin is that you've won. All you had to do was wait out the democracies of Europe and the United States and Britain, and eventually they will cave. So that would, I think, encourage him to further aggression, be it in Moldova or other theaters in which he's engaged, which are multiple. And God forbid that aggression touch the NATO country, either willfully or intentionally or unintentionally, that would force a Western response. On the Ukraine side, I don't see any indication that the Ukrainians in any part of the country, either the formerly areas close to Russia or the ones closer to the NATO borders, I don't see any indication that they would want to stop fighting. So I think what you would see is you'd see a Syria-type situation where they would continue to fight with anything that they had. You'd see more slaughter and more brutality, more needless loss of life. And so it's not a situation that I think benefits anybody but Putin.
Looking at Europe, Mary, I've spent time studying the various 27 countries in the EU, more than that in NATO, but let's look at the big economies. There is a rise of what can be called, because I don't have a better term for it, the far right, not just center right, righter than that. Alternative for Deutschland in Germany, the Le Pen party in France, in Italy, it's the Brothers of Italy under Giorgia Meloni. There's a new party, not quite coalition yet, in the Netherlands. And these parties are anti-immigrant chiefly, but they're also not interested in continuing supporting Ukraine. So quite apart from what where the U.S. is going, Europe itself has now grown reluctant. So what does Europe look like after Ukraine stops shooting? What does NATO look like?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think you have to be careful with the characterizations of these parties, because Giorgia Meloni, the leader of Italy, has turned out to be quite a competent, and she's obviously a conservative, but I wouldn't call her a far right person. I think what the rise of these other parties that you've mentioned signifies is a deep dissatisfaction with their economic circumstances, with the results of uncontrolled immigration, which has resulted in many countries, like, for instance, Germany, after the Syrian civil war, which sent millions of people fleeing into Europe, which then Chancellor Merkel welcomed with open arms. They've seen some very violent crimes visited upon their citizens as a result, and a lack of willingness to ascribe to the values of the societies that they entered. Sweden is another example of that. And so it's just a deep frustration. It's really the failure of the major political parties in Western Europe, both to manage their borders, but also to realize that while it's really nice to have huge welfare states, you also have to have growth to support them. And so there's a deep discontent with the political elites, and rightly so. I mean, when was the last time you saw a Germany, a France, an Austria, you know, grow more than 2% or 3%. When was the last time that they had low single-digit unemployment rates? I mean, you're going back a long time. These parties don't have any sense of how to lead. They don't think strategically. And what will happen if we have a ceasefire in Ukraine and these parties start to gain even more traction in their respective geographies? Well, you could have a really significant shift. And my fear is that, again, the weakness of the United States, the loss of our deterrence, and the corresponding weakness from Western Europe in particular. Notice I'm not saying Eastern Europe, because the Poles and those that border Putin and Ukraine and Belarus, they understand the threats, that you'll see a real divergence in policy and a retreat and a real burden put on those nations of Eastern and Central Europe to defend themselves. And again, a temptation, not just for Putin, but for his friends in Iran, his friends in China, to take advantage. And so I think it's an immensely dangerous time.
Operation Steadfast Defender 2024. That is the name of NATO's largest exercise since the Cold War, underway now to May, rehearsing how U.S. troops could reinforce European allies in countries bordering Russia on the alliance's eastern flank. 90,000 troops to join in these exercises, it'll be in Baltic states, Germany, Poland. I believe that Finland will be involved. This is another world, Mary, because we've also had headlines projecting war with Russia, between NATO and Russia, in 5 to 7 years, sometimes 20 years. So NATO is going in one way, the EU parties are going in another way. What does this mean for the U.S.? That is our leadership also being questioned as Europe pulls back or reconsiders Ukraine?
I think there's a lot of confusion amongst U.S. allies of why we are taking such a soft approach to Iran after its proxies have launched more than 130 attacks since October. We've responded only really a handful of times. And I think, you know, the lack of U.S. leadership is dangerous. As far as NATO is concerned, John, this is probably one of the most functional, if not the most functional, multilateral institution in the world, largely because it's dominated by the United States and it's a military alliance. And it did expand and kind of, I think, lose its sense of its core mission in that interregnum between the fall of the Soviet Union and today. But I think Russia has concentrated minds at NATO, and I'm thankful that it's there. But It is not the final solution, right? You need more than just NATO doing exercises to deter Vladimir Putin. You need leadership in Washington. You need tough rhetoric that's backed up by action.
We're headed to the Red Sea. Mary Kissel, the Executive Vice President of Stevens Incorporated, former Senior Advisor to the Secretary of State. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.